Good evening. New York City declares a state of emergency. The governor bans gatherings over 500. Major sporting events are canceled. The stock market crashes again. And whistleblower Chelsea Manning attempts suicide and is let free from jail. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Thursday, March 12th, 2020. And we have an extended news, by the way. We're going to be going until 7 p.m. So stand near your phones. We'll be taking your calls at 212-209-2877 later in this broadcast. Whistleblower Chelsea Manning, jailed for refusing to testify against WikiLeaks before a grand jury, has been released, but is still on the hook for over $250,000 in fines for contempt of court. U.S. District Judge Anthony Trenga's order comes just a day after Manning attempted suicide inside the Alexandria Detention Center in Virginia, reportedly by using a bedsheet to hang herself. The grand jury that Manning was summoned to testify before had concluded its work and was discharged on March 12th. Trenga wrote in the order, therefore, her appearance is no longer needed and her detention no longer serves any coercive purpose. However, Trenga declared that the $1,000 a day fine he imposed on Manning last year, in addition to her imprisonment, was not punitive, but rather necessary to the coercive purpose of the court's civil contempt order and will therefore be payable immediately, all $256,000 of it. It's unclear whether Manning will be jailed again if she fails to pay the fine, given that the year-long imprisonment has deprived her of income as well. Manning was the U.S. Army intelligence analyst who provided WikiLeaks with the Iraq and Afghanistan war logs in 2010, along with a trove of State Department documents for which she was convicted under the Espionage Act. She spent 7 years in federal prison until President Barack Obama commuted her 35-year sentence at the end of his term in office. When Trenga convened the grand jury to investigate WikiLeaks in February 2019, Manning was summoned to testify but refused. She said, "I would rather starve to death and to change my opinion in this regard, and when I say that, I mean that quite literally." The month before, WikiLeaks publisher Julian Assange was arrested in the United Kingdom and is awaiting possible extradition to the United States on charges related to the 2010 revelations, which could see him in prison for 175 years if convicted. And Defense Secretary Mark Esper confirmed that President Donald Trump has given the military permission to avenge the deaths of two U.S. troops and a British serviceman in a rocket attack on Camp Taji outside Baghdad. General Kenneth F. McKenzie, who leads the Central Command encompassing Iraq and Iran, says his job is to deter Iran.
They hostile forces, most likely Shia militia groups, launched more than a dozen rockets at U.S. and coalition forces at Camp Taji in Iraq, killing two U.S. and one British service member, as well as wounding several more. While we are still investigating the attack, I will note that the Iranian proxy group Kativ Hezbollah is the only group known to have previously conducted an indirect fire attack of this scale against U.S. and coalition forces in Iraq. While periods of decreased tension may provide the illusion of a return to normalcy, ample intelligence, and indeed yesterday's actions, indicate the Iranian regime's desire to continue malign activities that threaten lives, destabilize sovereign nations, threaten freedom of navigation, regional commerce, global energy supplies, and the global economy itself. At CENTCOM, we recognize that so long as the U.S. applies diplomatic and economic pressure, the joint force must be postured to deter Iran from employing the military element of power to counter our actions. Our presence sends a clear message about our capabilities and our will to defend partners and U.S. national interests. Going forward, it is CENTCOM's objective to posture forces in the region with the operational depth to achieve a consistent state of deterrence against Iran and to be adaptable to future Iranian threats.
A total of 18 rockets struck Camp Taji on Wednesday. The base, located 27 kilometers north of Baghdad, is used by the U.S. coalition to train the local security forces. The legality of the U.S. forces' presence in Iraq is itself in question. The country's parliament had voted to eject about 5,000 U.S. troops in the country, mostly as advisors and trainers. An American drone strike killed Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and a number of Iraqi Shia militia officials at the Baghdad International Airport earlier this year, bringing both Iran and the United States to the brink of war. Meanwhile, the escalating coronavirus emergency sent the stock market Thursday into its worst slide since the Black Monday crash of 1987, extending a sell-off that has now wiped out most of Wall Street's big gains since Trump took office. Stocks fell so fast on Wall Street at the opening bell that they triggered an automatic 15-minute trading halt for the second time this week. The so-called circuit breakers were first adopted after the 1987 crash, until this week hadn't been tripped since 1997. The heavy losses came amid a cascade of cancellations and shutdowns across the globe, including Trump's suspension of travel to the U.S. from Europe, except for the residents of Great Britain. Trump's announcement on Wednesday night was widely criticized as playing a xenophobic or anti-foreign blame game rather than dealing with the health crisis. Trump defended his decision earlier today at a meeting with Ireland's Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar, who tried to carve an exception to the ban for his own country as Trump fielded questions.
Can you confirm if Ireland will be excluded from your travel ban, that your European travel ban you announced last night?
Well, they know, and I think it was made very clear last night who is and who isn't. We'll be discussing that. We'll be discussing some of the moves that we're going to be making, and I think it's going to work out very well for everybody. But it's a world problem, and you do need separation in some cases. You have some areas that are very heavily infected, and you have some areas that aren't, frankly, but we do need separation for a little period of time in some cases.
Just saying that, the President has excluded Ireland from the travel ban, and one of the things we have in Ireland is CBP, American Border Security in Ireland. Went through it myself yesterday, and they were asking the right questions, whether people had been to China, things like that, so that puts us in a slightly different position.
And one of the reasons UK basically has been, it's got the border, it's got very strong borders, and they're doing a very good job. They don't have very much infection at this point, and hopefully they'll keep it that way.
Mr. President, there are many European leaders who are upset that they weren't consulted about the travel ban. Can you explain your rationale for not consulting with them first before announcing it last night?
Well, we get along very well with the European leaders, but we had to make a decision, and I didn't want to take time, and you know, it takes a long time to make the individual calls, and we are calling, and we have spoken to some of them prior to, some of the majors prior to, but we had to move quickly. I mean, when they raise taxes on us, they don't consult us, and I think that's probably one and the same. They've done things. The European Union, as you know, has done some very big tax raises over the years, not so much with me because I won't put up with it, but they haven't consulted us. And in the case of European Union, I've consulted with many people.
Do you have any idea what the overall economic impact of these travel restrictions?
Well, it'll be a big impact, but it's a bigger impact, and it's also a human impact, which is more important, frankly, than the financial, when you lose thousands of additional lives. As an example, if I didn't close very, very early, Leo, you know, we closed very early with China, and I took a lot of heat, including from you people, a lot of heat. They called me everything from a racist to everything else. It was terrible. And the same people, then they say, oh, he closed too fast. Why did he close? Most of them said, why did he close with China? That turned out to be a great move. What we did with Europe is this was the time. And China, a lot of it came from when you think of what happened to Europe, because it was very fast and very furious. And what happened is a lot of people went from China into Europe, and Europe suffered tremendously. You know, you see what's going on. And so I just wanted that to stop as it pertains to the United States, and that's what we've done. We've stopped.
And Trump then went on to claim he might limit internal U.S. travel if he feels it's warranted.
Is it a possibility? Yes. If somebody gets a little bit out of control, if an area gets too hot, you see what they're doing in New Rochelle, which is good, frankly. It's the right thing. But then it's not enforced. It's not very strong. But people know they're being watched. New Rochelle, that's a hot spot.
Just a separate topic. You spoke to the Saudi crown prince.
And the European Union quickly slammed Trump's unilateral decision, declaring the virus a global crisis not limited to any continent, and it requires cooperation. The president was referring to the isolation of a part of the city of New Rochelle, just north of New York City, where there was a outbreak or a hotspot of the coronavirus in that area. And one of the two major candidates left vying for the Democratic nomination, frontrunner Joe Biden, laid into Trump's travel ban as a political decision ignoring science.
And travel restrictions based on favoritism in politics rather than risk will be counterproductive. This disease could impact every nation and any person on the planet. We need a plan about how we're going to aggressively manage here at home. You know, you all do know, the American people have the capacity to meet this moment. We're going to face this with the same spirit that has guided us and through previous crises. And we'll come together as a nation. We'll look out for one another and do our part as citizens. We have to harness the ingenuity of our scientists and the resourcefulness of our people. And we have to help the world to drive coordinated global strategy, not shut ourselves off from the world. Protecting the health and safety of the American people is the most important job of any president. And unfortunately, this virus laid bare the severe shortcomings of the current administration. Public fears are being compounded by a pervasive lack of trust in this president, fueled by adversarial relationships with the truth that he continues to have. Our government's ability to respond effectively has been undermined by hollowing out our agencies and disparagement of science. And our ability to drive a global response is dramatically undercut by the damage Trump has done to us around the world. We have to get to work immediately to dig ourselves out of this hole.
And Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders spoke earlier today about the coronavirus. He calls for compassion for the weakest among us.
We are all in this together. Unfortunately, in this time of international crisis, it is clear to me, at least, that we have an administration that is largely incompetent and whose incompetence and recklessness have threatened the lives of many, many people in our country. So today I would like to give a brief overview of what, in my view, we must do to respond to this crisis. First and foremost, we are dealing with a national emergency, and the President of the United States must understand that and declare that emergency. Next, because President Trump is unwilling and unable to lead selflessly, we must immediately convene an emergency bipartisan authority of experts to support and direct a response that is comprehensive, compassionate, and based first and foremost on science and fact. In other words, Congress, in a bipartisan manner, must take responsibility for addressing this unparalleled crisis. Further, we must aggressively make certain that the public sector and the private sector are strongly cooperating with each other, and we need national and state hotlines staffed with well-trained people who have the best information available. One of the aspects of the current crisis is there are people who are asking themselves, what are the symptoms of coronavirus? Do I have a cold? Do I have the flu? Do I have the coronavirus? Who's going to help me? Where do I go to seek medical treatment? How do I get a test? When is that test going to be processed? People have a lot of questions. And at the statewide and federal level, we need experts to provide the necessary information to our people. The American people deserve transparency, something that the current administration has fought day after day to stifle. In other words, we need to know what is happening right now in our country, in our states, and in fact, all over the world.
And when I outro,
if there was ever a time for transparency and honesty and being straightforward, this is that moment. And we need that information coming from credible, respected, scientific voices, of which we have many in our own country and all over this world, not from politicians. And during a crisis, we must make sure that that we care for the communities most vulnerable to the health and economic pain that is coming. Those in nursing homes and rehabilitation facilities, those confined in immigration detention centers, those who are currently incarcerated and in jails, and all people regardless of their immigration status.
And that's Vermont Senator and presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. In more financial news, Trump often points proudly to the big run-up on Wall Street under his administration, warning a crowd at a rally last August that whether you love me or hate me, you got to vote for me, or else your 401k will go down the tubes. Economist and author Jack Rasmus says the precipitous drop in the financial markets is a sign the country is entering a deep recession that he says will affect what he calls the Main Street economy. He says the current situation is something new.
It doesn't go up and down by 2,000 points. You know, so that what really makes it different. And what's important is that it's not just equities and stock prices that are plummeting. It's all financial asset prices globally are the deep downswing. I'm talking about oil and commodity futures. I'm talking about currencies, muni bonds, and they're all synchronizing, and they're in downturn. And at the same time, the real economy is in recession. We're in a recession right now. China's economy, the forecast, independent forecasts are slipping from 6% growth rate to anywhere between 2 and minus 2%. China and the U.S. are half of the world's economy. Japan already entered a recession last quarter. Europe, of course, is in falling into recession. Latin America, Australia, Korea. So we have a global real economy receding here, contracting. And on top of that, we have all these financial asset markets plummeting. And what happens is the two feed back on each other, the real and financial economy, and exacerbate each other and collapse.
This is just going to be a moderate recession. This is not going to be a super recession like in 2008.
Well, that's happy talk. Most professional economists don't want to go out on a limb, or they work for businesses and they can't say it's going to be worse, or they probably get fired as being alarmist. This is not a normal recession. It won't be a V-shaped.
What does that mean, V-shaped?
A V-shaped means sharp downturn, but a sharp recovery here within months. You know, that's what a V-shape. This is very much a long, elongated U-shape, as I predict. It's not going to be over real quick because, you know, the economy was growing weak already after 11 years of growth, of, you know, not very strong growth for, you know, wages in the real economy, but it was growth nonetheless. And, you know, it's far extended beyond what it should. The financial markets, the stock markets, were artificially boosted 25% by Trump, by his tax cut policies. And so that artificial 25% in the last few years under Trump is now retracting even faster than it went up.
Coronavirus. Did the coronavirus?
Yeah, well, that just precipitated where we were already headed very slowly. And it made what would have been a normal recession into something more serious than a normal recession. Look what's happening with the corporate bond market right now behind the scenes. It's in big trouble. And that's why the Federal Reserve just announced today it was pumping $500 billion into the markets in 1 month, what's called 1 month repo, repo injection, and another $500 billion in 3 month repo injections into the market. That's the Federal Reserve providing liquidity, cash for corporations, $1 trillion here in corporate injections to keep the corporate sector afloat, because what's happening now is the corporate sector is cashing in their credit lines and hoarding the cash because they know something more serious is around the corner and happening. And, you know, what Trump announced yesterday in terms of his stimulus program was a big joke. Economically as well as politically, and the markets and corporations know it, and that's why the market dropped another 2,000 today.
How about the Democrats? They're coming up now with a one-year plan to provide extended unemployment and sick leave for 2 weeks and things like that, not permanent but for 1 year.
is better than Trump's proposal, which was just, you know, give more loans to small businesses and drop the payroll tax here. You know, make Social Security worse. Democrats, a little bit better. It's going to take far more than what Trump has proposed and even what the Democrats have proposed, you see. Both Republicans and the Democrats don't really engage in fiscal stimulus needed for the rest of the economy and for working class folks in this economy.
It always seems so anemic. It always does seem.
Yes, yes.
I'm no expert.
Republicans don't provide anything. They just ruin the economy by making their rich folks and friends and campaign contributors richer. And then the Democrats come in because the Republicans wreck the economy, and they bail out the banks and big corporations, and they throw a few crumbs at the rest. Well, you can't keep throwing these crumbs anymore. You know, that's the typical Democrat response. That was the response under Obama, and that'll be the response under Biden. And you could see it, not sufficient to really restore the economy and make Main Street whole once again.
How's this going to relate to this this already quite testy political race that's going on?
Will this negatively impact Trump in his run? Yeah, it probably will. But all that will depend on how aggressive the Democrats are in providing necessary solutions. You know, Sanders provides the program that would be a solution, but it's very clear that the corporate wing of the Democratic Party does not want to go there, and Biden won't go there either. So, you know, the scenario, well, a likely scenario is Trump may lose the election because of the economy, but then the Democrats may blow it once again in bailing out Main Street.
Economist and author Jack Rasmus. The Dow officially went into a bear market on Wednesday when it finished the day down more than 20% from its all-time high for the Standard & Poor's 500, which is one of the indices that they use to measure the stock market. This is the fastest drop from a record high to a bear market since World War II.
I've been waiting for something to happen, for a week or a month or a year, with the blood in the ink of the headlines and the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before, where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. And there's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and there are lives in the balance.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo.
And coming up at 7 p.m., Justice Matters with Bob Ganji. Stay tuned.
In sports news, the NCAA canceled its men's and women's basketball tournaments on Thursday because of the spread of coronavirus, putting an abrupt end to the season less than a month before champions were to be crowned. At Madison Square Garden in New York, the Big East game between Creighton and St. John did start, but at halftime, the conference called off that game and all the rest. Turns out it was the last Division I basketball game to be played this season.
They sell us the president the same way they sell us our clothes and our cars. They sell us everything from youth to religion. The same time they sell us our wars.
The NCAA men's basketball tournament has been played every year since 1939 when Oregon won the championship in Evanston, Illinois. It has grown through the years, both in size and stature. The three-week tournament generates almost $1 billion in revenue each year for the NCAA and its hundreds of member universities and colleges, most coming from a television contract with CBS and Turner Broadcasting that pays the NCAA almost $800 million a year. And Major League Baseball delayed the start of its season by at least 2 weeks because of the coronavirus outbreak and suspended the rest of its spring training game schedule. Opening day had been scheduled for March 26th. The decision announced by Commissioner Rob Manfred on Thursday left open whether each team would still play a 162-game schedule. The announcement came after some spring training games in Florida were still in progress. Major League Baseball had not had a mass postponement of openers since 1995, when the season was shortened from 162 to 144 games following a 7.5-month players' strike that also wiped out the 1994 World Series. And National Hockey League Commissioner Gary Bettman said Thursday the league will pause its season effective immediately because of the coronavirus pandemic. The move came one day after the NBA suspended its season after a player tested positive for COVID-19, which is another name for coronavirus. Bettman said the hope is to resume play later and still award the Stanley Cup. The NHL, or National Hockey League, is halting play with 189 games left in the season and uncertainty about how many more, if any, could be played before the playoffs, which typically begin in early April. A handful of European hockey leagues have already called off the remainder of their seasons. With millions of Americans facing a bleak economic future of possible unemployment or coronavirus quarantines, America's lack of paid sick leave or family leave for most workers is becoming a major political issue in this current health crisis. Yesterday, GOP Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee blocked an attempt by Senate Democrats to quickly pass legislation on Wednesday that would require employers to provide paid sick leave. Under the Senate's rules, any one senator can try to set up a vote or pass a bill by unanimous consent, but any one senator can also object to that request. This emergency paid sick days legislation requires all employers to allow workers to accrue 7 days of paid sick leave and to provide an additional 14 days available immediately in the event of any public health emergency, including the current coronavirus crisis. At the news conference today, New York Senator Democrat Kirsten Gillibrand said the bill must be passed now.
The package includes two very pivotal policy ideas that will help families meet this challenge: paid family leave and paid sick days. Now, the Senate must do its job. Paid sick leave and paid family leave must be included in any package put forward by the Senate. We have to pass these policies now because the truth is people are facing impossible choices right now. In New York State, many of our public schools and universities have already suspended classes or canceled in-person classes for the rest of the school year. If you are a single mother with school-aged kids, how do you choose between putting food on the table or making sure your kids are safe at home? Many Americans live with an aging parent, and we know that the elderly are most at risk. What do you do if your elderly parent gets sick? How could any of us go to work and leave our sick mother or father behind? These are the simple choices that people should not be forced to make. Sadly, they make these choices every single day. Right now, more than 80% of all American workers don't have access to paid family and medical leave. Lower income workers are even less likely. We are the only industrialized country in the world that doesn't have access to paid family and medical leave. It's worse than unacceptable. It's terrible policy.
And California Democrat and former presidential candidate Kamala Harris says the fate of government workers has been ignored by Trump.
There are 2.7 million federal workers, and we have been asking the administration what they are going to do to ensure that those federal workers are receiving the kinds of protections they need as they do their job of working on behalf of the American people, often interacting every day with the American public. We have yet to hear a clear plan. Among the people who work for the Department of Homeland Security, again, we have oversight over that in the Committee on Homeland Security, TSA agents. We already have a couple of TSA agents out of San Jose, California, who have tested positive. And we have asked then Ken Cuccinelli and the administration, what is your plan to make sure that the TSA workers who come in contact with people every day, whether they're flying from Oakland to Los Angeles or coming from a foreign country into the United States, and we've heard no clear plan for what they intend to do to keep those TSA workers safe in their workplace. And then FEMA. So let's be clear. In California, as in many places around the country, but in California, we're on the eve of the wildfire crisis. FEMA workers are very important to be able to address these natural disasters. What is this administration's plan to ensure that first responders, including FEMA workers, are protected in the invariable outcome of this season, which is going to be fires and wildfires? And the additional point there is, what is this administration's plan when during natural disasters we often house people in very small areas, in very dense areas?
And former candidate New Jersey Senator Cory Booker said the paid sick leave legislation is a must pass.
It is abjectly irresponsible for us not to put paid family leave as part of the package that we pass before we leave the United States Senate. To not act on that is endangering the health not just of the millions of people who cannot afford to stay home without paid family leave, but to the millions of others that may come in contact with them because they do not self-quarantine.
And you're listening to the news, WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. The song you heard earlier, Lives in the Balance by Jackson Browne. Meanwhile, the coronavirus outbreak is roiling American society as well as most of the world, but the vast majority of new cases of the COVID-19 illness have been linked to Europe, which the head of the Centers for Disease Control, Robert Redfield, called the new China. Deaths in Italy topped 1,000, with more than 15,000 testing positive. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, also acknowledged that the United States was lagging other countries in testing to learn how widespread the virus really is.
Basically, you seem to be saying, because you can't name anyone specifically, that there's no one specifically in charge that we can count on to make sure that people who need to be tested, healthcare workers or anyone else, there's not one person that can ensure that these tests can be administered. Yes or no?
My colleague is looking at me to answer. Here we go.
Okay.
All right. So,
and I do have another question. So if we can kind of get
so very quickly,
the system
does not, is not really geared to what we need right now, what you are asking for. That is a failing.
It is a failing.
I mean, let's admit it. The fact is, the way the system was set up is that the public health component that Dr. Redfield was talking about was a system where you put it out there in the public and a physician asks for it and you get it. The idea of anybody getting it easily, the way people in other countries are doing it, we're not set up for that. Do I think we should be? Yes, but we're not.
Okay, that's really disturbing, and I appreciate the information.
And that was Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. Meanwhile, in local news, Mayor Bill de Blasio on Thursday declared a state of emergency over the spread of the deadly coronavirus and predicted that New York City would have 1,000 confirmed cases by next week. It's going to get a lot worse before it gets better, he warned during a City Hall news conference. The city currently counts 95 confirmed cases of the coronavirus, de Blasio said, up from 42 just since Wednesday. De Blasio declared that New York City's public schools would remain open despite the outbreak, although extracurricular activities and parent-teacher conferences are either going online or will be canceled. There has been two middle schools sharing the same campus in the South Bronx that were closed today after one student was found to be tested positive for the coronavirus. Additionally, De Blasio said he would authorize 10% of city employees to work from home and put another 20% on staggered schedules, as much as possible away from the rush hours. The changes will affect up to 100,000 municipal employees. De Blasio warned that he expects the crisis to last at least 6 months, with more time needed to recover. De Blasio said he agreed with Governor Andrew Cuomo's decision to close all places with legal occupancy of 500 people or more, including Madison Square Garden and Barclays Center, and to slash the occupancy of smaller places in half. De Blasio said he won't be surprised if the move forces some businesses to close, but said these are the rules we will now enforce from now on.
I don't think for most of us, even who have been in public life a long time, we've seen a situation quite like this, where we receive extraordinary new information on what now literally feels like an hourly basis. So we are constantly making adjustments. We're also going to go over the numbers here, which are very sobering. We're seeing intense increases in the number of cases in the city, and I think we have to fully understand this is the shape of things to come. So we'll start with saying we're going to be giving regular updates, but expect major changes from day to day, because we've now seen a pattern of such extraordinary information coming in that's forcing very, very different decisions than we would have made typically, not only here, obviously all over the country. But the last 24 hours have been very, very sobering. Literally, yesterday morning feels like a long time ago. We got a lot of information in the course of the day yesterday. A lot changed then. Then last night, it just seemed like the world turned upside down in the course of just a few hours. So, you know, I think what we are seeing is more and more of a consensus on how to act. And everyone is moving as quickly as we can. That said, you're going to see differences, of course, between different parts of the country, what public sector and private sector does, and I'm going to try my best to explain the specific approach we're taking. But again, it will be evolving literally daily and hourly, and we will update you constantly. In light of several new developments, obviously the numbers that we now have seen over the last 24 hours here in New York City, what we're seeing nationally and internationally, the reality of community spread that's been with us over these last few days, and the close working relationship between the city and state, the decisions that we are making together. And I spoke with Governor Cuomo at length earlier today about a specific set of decisions, and obviously you heard his announcements earlier today, which he and I discussed in detail, and which I agree with fully. In light of all those changing realities, it is time now to declare a state of emergency in New York City. And I will explain what that means, the powers that invest in me, what it will allow us to do going forward. I'll also emphasize that the declaration of state of emergency authorizes the use of the powers, but we will use them as needed. It doesn't mean everything will happen at once. And we're going to try and be very, very careful to give you accurate information about what the city is doing and why. There's already some very inaccurate information out there, which we'll speak to later on. But I want to ask all of you in the news media, if you're hearing things are being attributed to the city of New York, please ask if it's true or not. We will confirm with you instantly. It's very important that the people of the city know what is really coming from their government and what is not. But now, again, it's time to sign this state of emergency declaration. And continuing on the conversation with the governor, again, I fully support.
And that was Mayor de Blasio signing today's declaration of emergency, which gives the mayor many powers. We're going to look into all those powers. He discusses a lot of them at length during this 1.5 or 1 3/4 hour news conference he gave that just ended really moments ago. And we're going to really analyze that, and in future stories and over tomorrow and Saturday, maybe we'll be talking about exactly what that's going to mean, these emergency powers that were just signed by Mayor Bill de Blasio. You're listening to WBAI News. I'm Paul DiRienzo, and we have a few minutes. We're going to 7 o'clock when Bob Ganji comes to do his show. So, we're taking calls 212-209-2877. If you have any comments or questions about today's news, please keep them brief. We don't have a real lot of time. So, we're going to take those, and, we're going to, hopefully get to the bottom of these issues. And we have somebody on the line right now. Welcome to WBAI. How are you?
Good. Can you give a summary of what the restrictions have been passed with the state of emergency? Because it's not really clear. I mean,
yes,
theaters are down, museums are closed, at least some museums. But, you know, if you could go into a little more detail of what is actually going to affect people's day-to-day life, that would be appreciated.
Right. We went through some of them. It's a vast amount of things. As we said, most major sports events have been canceled all throughout the country, including a delay in the spring training of baseball, the end of national hockey, at least until April, and the cancellation of the NCAA March Madness. These are major things that are happening right now. And you're right, we did have a closing of the Metropolitan Museum has been closed, yeah. And has Carnegie Hall. We're going to be hearing a lot more about this.
Public pool's going to be open.
We don't know yet. At this point, we just don't know. We're going to try and find out. We'll bring you that news. Tune in tomorrow on the news, and we will be updating this information as it comes in. I don't think anybody, including the mayor himself, is quite sure how far this is going. As he said, in just a few hours, the whole world changed and went upside down for him as well. Can you imagine? So this is WBAI. We have somebody else on the line. Go ahead. You have a question or comment.
And folks, hey, at least we're hearing some good news. Chelsea Manning has been released from prison in Virginia. And right. As far as the fines go, I would just say that George Bush and Joe Biden should pay the fines because they were the drum leaders for this war in Iraq when there was no reason to even go there.
There you go. Thank you very much, caller, for that. We're going to move on. That's a good point there. That was the good news. Chelsea Manning is free, although she owes $250,000 in fines and has no visible means of support. And maybe she'll get a job here at BAI, which would be great, wouldn't it? Or Pacifica Radio, anyway. So you're listening to news on WBAI, our number 212-209-2877. We got another call on the line, and you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, good evening. I just wanted to put a little bit of information out there. Tulsi Gabbard, who is still running for president.
Yes, I'm sorry I didn't mention her. Tulsi Gabbard, very good. She was the third person. Good, go ahead.
And she has made statements, proposals about how to face the coronavirus pandemic. And they're very solid, very sound. And she also pointed out that South Korea has a quick, accurate test, which you don't really hear too much about. So it's something to research, too.
Thank you very much for that. And we're going to mention Tulsi Gabbard tomorrow. We're going to really get into her part of it. She hasn't been really in the forefront, obviously, as the race is boiled down to the two top candidates. But she does definitely have something to say, or she wouldn't be in the race. And you're on the air. Welcome to WBAI.
I remember when the measles outbreak was going on, you were talking about how it was outrageous that the state had the power to do quarantines and require vaccinations in order to keep people healthy.
I don't know if I said that, or I did one show on vaccinations upstate New York. I was sort of dispassionate about that because, you know, I want everything to be science-based, but we have a lot of interesting science on the dangers of vaccines, and I've definitely talked to scientists we've had on the air who acknowledge that. They might have a different opinion, but they definitely acknowledge that people, you have to take into account it's a real force when people feel something. It must be a reason for it.
When people feel something, there must be a reason for it.
Right, feel that that vaccines are dangerous. You know, there must be a reason for how they feel that way.
No, they are misinformed.
Mm-hmm.
And if we had only had a vaccine ready for the COVID virus, I think everyone would be clamoring
to get it, but they're not going to pay for it. The Republicans said that they might pay for testing, but they wouldn't pay for treatment. That's how it stands right now. Next call. Thank you very much. You're on the radio. Welcome to WBAI. Hi. You're on the air. I guess not. Oh, there you are. Quick, make it quick. We don't have a lot of time. Comment or question on the news.
With all this information, is mass transit or small private schools going to be shut down?
Well, all we know of are two charter schools that share the same campus on 144th between Willis and 3rd. were closed at least for 24 hours and are being cleaned right now. The mayor has the power to close the schools. And as he said, we didn't play his entire talk today, but he said on several occasions that he would do it if necessary, but was hoping not to because of the impact it would have on people who depend on schools for their children. You know?
Thank you very much.
All right, good. And you're on WBAI. Yeah, welcome to the air. Go ahead.
I'd like to repeat something an earlier caller said about Tulsi Gabbard and the fact that Joe Biden supported the war that led us to the money being lost for the health care system that would have taken care of this issue.
Excellent point.
So I would like that to be brought up when you do bring her along, that Biden is the old way. And Tulsi already talking about regime change would have given us exactly what we needed to save our people out of this issue.
Thank you very much, caller. We're going to move on fast. We don't have a lot of time. And you're on the radio. Welcome to WBAI. Hi. Oh, the button is not responding. There it goes. You're on the air. Welcome to WBAI.
Yes. I heard a woman come on a couple callers earlier, and she indicated that people who are against vaccines are misinformed. I would like her to answer one question for me. In 1986, a law was passed, right, which makes the vaccine manufacturer totally not responsible for any harm, danger, or death that results from your taking a vaccine.
Very good point.
Why do they have that protection if it's so safe?
Right. There you go. The same thing with nuclear power. The same thing. And also many other large construction projects. The companies that do the construction never have to really pay for the liability if it doesn't work. And you're on the radio. Welcome to WBAI. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello. I think given the campaign for Bernie Sanders, Hail Mary, whatever they call that,
Hail Mary Pass.
Yes.
Famous.
Have Tulsi Gabbard. As he should declare right away, Tulsi Gabbard as his vice presidential, find with him best. She's still on the ballot. She can't even be in the.
I have a lot of time. I'm going to leave it at that. All I can say is Guthrie said that if it's more than two people, it's a movement to draft Tulsi Gabbard for vice president of the United States. Very good. Here on.
All right. I just want to know, why aren't there any protests demanding that something about. I mean,
we've been asking that question.
Coronavirus is a disease of capital. It's an advanced state of decay. It's not just.
Okay, thank you. What I can say is I find it surprising that I've run into people who agree with Trump's analysis that this is some sort of foreign attack on America instead of just what it is, a virus. You know, that's loose. That's not, you know, in itself particularly deadly, but. As the guests we've had on in the past few days have said over and over again, is unknown. Very little is known. And the president is not testing and there's no data and there's no data, no information about what's happening. And we can't make an intelligent decision about what's going on without data. And that seems to be the president of the United States, President Donald Trump, constantly talking about, you know, as if a virus was a foreign national invading our country instead of what it really is a pathogen that is one of millions that are constantly coming through our population and which we have to deal with. And it's about time we dealt with it scientifically and not through crazy emotions of our dear president. Well, some say he's not our president. I don't really go that far. So I guess we can go to the outro music for the news. So thanks so much for listening of this extended news program. There's so much to say and so much to talk about and happening in this time. This is one of the most interesting and momentous times, really, in modern American history. So it's don't get too far away from your from your radios, because Bob Ganji is going to be come in with Justice Matters in just a moment, and we'll be talking more. He'll be talking much more about what ills us here in New York City and in America in these days.
Hi, I'm Isaac Ferguson, host of Caribbean Voices and Beyond, heard on WBAI 99.5 FM, Saturdays 4 to 6 p.m. Join me this Saturday when Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams will be my guest. Mr. Adams will be here to discuss his strategies for fighting the coronavirus, his personal battle and victory over diabetes 2, his ideas on gun regulations, traffic deaths, the housing crisis, and many other important topics affecting New York City. He will also discuss his mayoral run and his plans should he become the next mayor of the greatest city on earth. Pick up your telephone, call in, and join the conversation. That is this Saturday, 4 to 6 p.m. on Caribbean Voices and Beyond on WBAI 99.5 FM. Once every 10 years, America mounts a census and attempts to count every single person living in the country, citizens and non-citizens, immigrants, documented and undocumented alike. This is an extremely difficult goal, even under ideal circumstances, and even as the actions of the current U.S. government has created fear and uncertainty that all but ensures that many immigrants will stay in the shadows, too terrified to risk contact with any governmental official, census takers included. However, by law, namely Title 13 of the U.S. Code, the Census Bureau cannot release any information about you, your business, or your immigration status to law enforcement. So step out of the shadows, stand up and be counted. This is a public service of WBAI Community Outreach.
We've got our friends at CNN here. You guys love breaking news, and you did it. You broke it. I think what no one in this room wants to admit is that Trump has helped all of you. He couldn't sell steaks or vodka or water or college or ties or Eric, but he has helped you. He's helped you sell your papers and your books and your TV. You helped create this monster, and now you're profiting off of him.
We're with you, Michelle Wolf, but if corporate media has got you down, maybe you should try WBAI. We're listener-supported community radio, questioning the mainstream narratives trumpeted by the news profiteers. But in order for this whole thing to work, we need your help. Please go to give2wbai.org to find out how you can support WBAI or call 516-620-3602. And thanks for supporting Free Speech Radio on WBAI New York.
Don't tell me to stop. Tell the rain not to drop. Tell me everything I'm not. Don't.
Hi, this is Liz Wright. You're listening to WBAI in New York.
The Pacifica Bylaws referendum is underway. And as a member, you have a right to vote on whether to replace the current bylaws with the proposed bylaws. Some proponents assert that drastic change is necessary in the face of steady financial decline and a significant loss of listenership at some stations. Some opponents claim there is a secret plan to sell off one or more stations, such as WBAI in New York, and use the proceeds to prop up the remaining stations. For more info, visit elections.pacifica.org or leave a message on 510-931-7504. Be sure to cast your ballot by 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on March 19th.